listen to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast because Rod and Karen are hot.
I just need to clear my mind now. It's been racing since the summertime. Now I'm holding down the summer now. And all I want is what I can't buy now. Cause I ain't got the money on me right now. And I told you to wait. Yeah, I told you to wait. So I'ma need a little more time now. Cause I ain't got the money on me right now. And I thought you could wait. Yeah, I thought you could wait. These bitches surrounding me. I want something out me. Then they talk about me. Would be lost without me. We could have been somebody. Thought you'd be different about it. Now I know you not it. So let's get on with it. Hey, welcome to the Black Guy Who Tips podcast. Your host, Rod Ed. Yeah. We're in the house on a Tuesday.
Yes, Tuesday.
Keep in mind, we will be off tomorrow. I'm not even doing Balls D Sports tomorrow. I'm doing that Thursday. Okay. I will be completely off tomorrow, okay?
Yeah, you did double shift today. I don't blame you.
Yeah, if you're listening to this, I just recorded This Too Much with Bossy, Ickby, who we recorded a bunch of This Too Much episodes, and it's freemium. It'll be on the regular feed as well. So you'll probably be seeing this after you see it on, you know, the regular feed. Mm-hmm. But it was an episode about Insecure, which seems to be everybody's favorite thing to talk about. So you can listen to us ramble about it for 2.5 hours, and we had a great time, and we discovered a shared fear of cookouts that neither one of us has ever shared with anybody else. So I thought that was beautiful. That's the kind of things you find out when you listen to This Too Much. So yeah, after I did that, we're now doing this. That's right. And it's a very special Tuesday because it's a Wine and White Folks Tuesday. Mm-hmm. That's right. And we're gonna go ahead and get into that, but first you got to do a bunch of show stuff. Of course, just listen to the Black Guy Who Tips right now, and the official weapon of the show is
the taser.
An unofficial sport
is bullet ball
at Bullet Ball Extreme. And today's podcast is triple sponsored.
That's what I'm talking about.
Double sponsored.
Double, triple.
All right, my bad. Double sponsored. Brought to you by Shadow Dog Productions. Don't forget, we have audio play albums out there, The Best of Rod and Karen, and also another album called Sunspot and Other Ratchetness. Mm-hmm. Check us out, man. It's on iTunes, it's on Stitcher. I mean, it's on Apple, where you get Apple Music. I forgot that's what they call it now. It's on Apple Music. It's on Amazon. Just search for us. You can search my name, Rod Morrow. It'll come up. And listen to us do some acting. It's fun, okay? Also, because obviously this is a Wine and White People news heavy episode, it's brought to you by some wine, okay, guys? We're going to be drinking some. Triangle Wine Company. They have a huge selection of fine wine and craft beer from all over the world for every budget. You can get you some by going to trianglewineco.com and check out all, listen, it's so much wine on there, you're never going to get to the bottom of it.
That's what most people are saying.
Yes, it is really, for people that love wine, it is a treat. And you will see stuff you never heard of, places you never been to before, and just, you know, I say try it all. And if you use code TBGWT, they extended to past August, like August 13th or something.
Okay.
But anyway, if you use code TBGWT, you get 10% off. So make sure you guys do it, man. I mean, come on. What are you, crazy? No, we're gonna keep drinking this wine, and we're gonna keep giving them shout outs. That's mm-hmm. what we do. And I'll go into more detail later, and when we get close to these white folks. All right, let's go ahead and get into the news, okay? Let me see if there's any regular news we need to cover before we get to these white people. Because I know what you guys are here for.
I know, right?
Us getting drunk and talking about white people. And let me tell you something, I'm here for that too. But first I need to see if there's any regular news that I'm skipping. I don't know what all happened in the regular world. No, I've been busy all day.
You know I don't.
Nope, I don't see anything worth covering. So let's skip all that bullshit.
Right?
Let's see what else we got. Well, I guess technically we could do some of our segments before we get into these white folks. That's not too bad, I guess. You know what? Let me see what segment I want to do. I guess we can do well, they're all so sad. I was trying to think of a happy one, but there are no happy ones really.
No, it's not.
Tell you what, we're just gonna have to go straight to fucking with black people, guys. And everybody's gonna get fucked with, and we're gonna be okay. We gotta build up, build up our tolerance. We're just fucking with those black people. We're just fucking with those blacks. We're just fucking with black people. That's right, guys. Time to play the game that we all hate to play. It's fucking with black people. The game we go all around the globe. We find different articles, make us feel fucked with. It's black people. We assign point scores from 0 to 100. Intervals of 25. Today's contestants, everybody. All right. Let me go find some old ones. Oh, here we go. These are pretty old and pretty good.
Ah!
Elizabeth Banks is a white lady, an actress. You may know her from, I forget the name of that movie with Tom Cruise. He could repeat time and shit. She was the main woman in there. Anyway, she says she's sorry. She apologized. What was she apologized for? She has apologized to Steven Spielberg after she publicly criticized the director for not casting female leads in his films. The actor and director has made remarks during an acceptance speech Wednesday at the Women in Films Crystal Plus Lucy Awards. Crystal and Lucy Awards, during which she criticized the lack of female representation in Hollywood. I went to Indiana Jones and Jaws and every movie Steven Spielberg ever made, and by the way, he's never made a movie with a female lead. Mm. Sorry, Steven. I don't mean to call your ass out, but it's true.
You mean she, no, yeah, so fuck the niggas, nigga movie that he made, Color Purple.
Mm-hmm. That seemed to have several female leads in it.
Right. She didn't see it. That's what she's trying to say. I didn't care nothing about it, and I didn't see it, so I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what you, that's what you're trying to say. With no white women starring leading cool, roles, you ain't no La La Land.
Will you tell Miss Laura about?
Do what now?
I said tell Miss Laura goodbye.
Bye, Miss Laura.
Now he's directed 31 films. Three of them have had a female lead. Sugarland Express, which starred Goldie Hawn. Color Purple, which starred Whoopi Goldberg. And The BFG 2006, which starred 12-year-old actress, Ruby Barnhill. The correction prompted Banks to issue an apology to the director on Twitter. I messed up. When referring to Steven Spielberg at the Women in Film Award, I framed my comments about his film inaccurately. I want to be clear from the start that I take full responsibility for what I said, and I'm sorry. She also apologized to actor Sherry Belafonte, who was in the audience during the speech, and had shouted that Spielberg directed Color Purple. Banks responded by correcting herself, but when another audience member said that Spielberg hadn't directed the film, she reversed course and said, oh, so I'm right still? Banks was later criticized by some on social media for dismissing the cultural significance of the film, an adaptation of Alice Walker's novel about the lives of African-American women in the segregated Deep South in the 1930s. When I made the comments, I was thinking of recent films Steven Spielberg directed. It was not my intention to dismiss the import of The Color Purple.
Whatever. Know your history, bitch. You're going to call somebody out, be right. Don't call people out when you don't know what the fuck you talking about.
I made things worse by giving the impression that I was dismissing Sherry Belafonte when she attempted to correct me. I spoke with Sherry backstage. She was kind enough to forgive me. Those who have the privilege and honor of directing and producing films should be held accountable for our mistakes, whether it's about diversity or inaccurate statements. I'm very sorry, her statement concluded. Belafonte has in turn apologized to Banks on Twitter for yelling out The Color Purple and for mentioning Lolita, which Spielberg did not direct. Spielberg was so far not comment. He has not commented on the matter.
Well, probably best for him to do, because he's in a situation that's not funny being a man. Anything he say gonna be wrong, so you might as well just keep it pushing.
His next film is called The Papers, a historical drama about the Washington Post publication of the Pentagon Papers. The film will feature a female lead in Meryl Streep, who will play Kay Graham, the first female publisher of a U.S. newspaper. The film is just due to release in U.S. cinemas the 22nd of December. Damn, that's bad for her. She has had unfortunate timing with all of it.
Not only that, it's also going to tell me, you only think about his recent shit. So basically you're saying, fuck the old shit he did, like the old shit don't count. Like that's literally what you're trying to say. The old shit he did don't count. But when you talk about everything he did, you need to count that too.
Yep. 0 to 100.
Oh, she gets a 100. And she in that field too, right? She in the field. Mm-hmm. Right, no, baby, you get 100. You get a 100.
A whopping 100. Tell Miss Laura goodbye.
Come on.
I give her 100 too. That was terrible.
Why? Because you shouldn't have said nothing if you didn't know what you was talking about.
Try to be woke. Try to be too fast on the wokeness. You got to slow it down sometimes.
Because I can tell you, there probably are a lot of other directors that you could have called out, but he, quote unquote, was probably one of the biggest ones that crossed your mind at the time. And it probably sounded like she was talking and went off script. See, this is what happens when you crumble your script up and say, fuck it. Your script is wrote out for a reason. Follow the instructions that your publicist has written before you.
How South Jersey mayor came to terms with the internet meme. Cinnamonson Mayor Anthony Minetti is not happy. He had lost in the June 6th Republican primary, and 2 days later someone posted his image on Facebook with the face of a weeping basketball star superimposed on his.
Who was that with Michael Jordan? You didn't want to say. You didn't want to say the crying Jordan face. Yes! Niggas ain't gonna let the crying Jordan face die. Y'all might as well get that up. People talking about hanging it. Nope. Mm-mm. Niggas gonna love that shit till they can't get on the internet no more.
The same thing happened to his running mate for the township committee, June Newman, who also was defeated in the election. The photo was taken from their campaign flyer. What Minetti, 47, did not immediately realize was that he had been the victim of a popular internet joke. Instead, he believed that the post was racist. Minetti and Newman are white. The basketball great Michael Jordan, whose face is superimposed over theirs, is black.
Right.
It was racist to portray him in blackface, Minetti concluded. People who knew and spoke to, including African Americans, agreed. He said he was angry. The person who posted the doctor photo was a third grade teacher in the Beverly City School District. Minetti asked school officials to investigate when he heard something that shook the course of the action he had settled on. The crying Jordan is an internet meme, he learned, usually meant only to tease someone nursing a loss, no racism intended.
Right.
I'm not angry at all now, he said Thursday. It was only after the episode received local and national media attention earlier last week that he learned of the meme, which is an image of Jordan crying at a 2009 induction into the Basketball Hall of Fame. I don't live online, and then he said, I don't know memes, I don't know internet jokes. He said he had since again called the school district telling officials he had learned of the meme, though he had believed it to be a joke made in poor judgment. He added that he probably would not have contacted the district in the first place had he known the post was a meme. He said that he had originally consulted with about a dozen people spanning law enforcement, education, and the black community, a dozen people, and said they all unanimously believed the post was racist. He would not disclose the name of those people.
Of course not, because you ain't talking nobody black. You talk to the person you paying.
Karen, listen, I talked to Herman Cain. I talked to Ben Carson. I talked to Steve Harvey. They said it was racist. Still, he said he was not alone and interpreted the meme as he initially did. Portraying any white person in blackface is racist and unacceptable. Well, as a Republican, I guess he would know. There's no question about that. If this was such a well-known meme and this is something everybody knows about, why did Facebook administrator pull it down? It was flagged as racist by others. It was taken down because it was racist or deemed racist by the administrator. Because mm-hmm. they support y'all racist white people when y'all go in droves to black people's pages and make jokes.
And y'all flagged the shit.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't flag it, you flagged it.
Minetti identified the teacher as Annalise McCloskey. She did not return requests for comment. Minetti said he was unsure why she targeted his campaign. School Superintendent Elizabeth Giacobbe wrote in an email that the district gave the incident its due attention, but she will not comment further or say whether the district took any action. Minetti said he perhaps has a particular sensitivity to racial issues because of his experience working in healthcare with minority communities in Camden, where he is a pharmacist. Minetti and Newman finished.
You racist, that's what you're telling me.
Why you say that?
You have a problem with working with black folks? Why?
No, he's saying he's sensitive to racial issues because he's worked so closely with black people that, you know, he does not play that shit when it comes to racism. That's what he's saying. Because he's a pharmacist in the black part of town.
I don't believe you.
Minetti and Newman finished behind Ernest McGill, a retired police sergeant, and Ryan Horner, a wealth management advisor, in the primary race. Minetti will finish his term as mayor of Cinnamon Sun's 5-member committee at the end of the year. He served on the committee since 2002.
I have a question. So nobody on your staff was under the age of 40? Nobody on your staff was 20 and below? It was like, hey, You do notice the joke. So everybody on your staff is old and out of touch and don't be on social media. So the 12 people that you randomly talked to had no idea this was a meme. I don't believe you.
Yeah, I feel like it says something about the diversity of your staff that nobody knew it was a meme.
Even young white people know what it is, and they joke about it too.
0 to 100.
Oh, he get a 100.
I give it a 50. This is hilarious. He thought it was never some racism. He just thought it was. It's a harmless Michael Jordan meme. Not worth getting upset about for me. Matter of fact, give it a 0. I'm not upset at all. Fuck this dude. It's hilarious. It's goddamn hilarious.
Now it is hilarious. Okay.
It's blackface. No, nigga, you a loser. You crying. Okay. And that's why you still mad. That's why you went out to that teacher's job, because you still was fucking mad about the fact that you got your ass kicked and you was trying to get a victory, like, at least I got that bitch fired with her racism. I'm like, ain't nobody being racist to you, bruh. You just, you lost.
And take that L. Well, right. I dropped mine down to a 50.
All right. Yeah. I'm not fuck with it all. Some blackface. Yeah. Get the fuck out of my face.
Right.
I got a black face.
You don't even know what blackface is.
Right. I got a black face you can get out of. My.
Come on.
Oh, I just want to imagine what the conversations were like. How many people did he go up to? LaRon, can I talk to you for a second, buddy? Look at this. Look at this racism.
Nobody named LaRon.
You see, this is what's wrong with our public education system right now. Look at this. This racism that they are putting on me. I didn't do it. I'm a good Christian Republican, and they're trying to say I'm a black person. This is the most racist thing. This blackface right here, as far as I'm concerned, LaRon, this is straight up blackface, and I'm not gonna stand for it.
LaRon, you're the intern. What is that? What are you doing?
Sorry, excuse me. I'm just enjoying these sour grapes you brought. What you got
there? Sour grapes. You got a grape. I think he got a grip of sour grapes, Karen. Sour grapes. Drip of sour grapes. Got them sour grapes. Oh yes, you do. You got them sour grapes. You can put sour grapes. Sour grapes. Yeah, he just got them sour grapes, y'all. Turns out that a lot of people kind of like Kendall Jenner's Pepsi ad.
Did you come out with another one?
Nope, the first one that they pulled. Pepsi's controversial ad featuring model and reality TV star Kendall Jenner handing out a soda to a cop during a protest may not have been a total flop if the brand had just given it a chance. A survey of 2,202 people found that 44% of them had a more favorable view of Pepsi after watching the ad, while about a quarter of them had a less favorable view. Sentiment toward the ad varied widely by race. 75% of Latinos and 51% of blacks said the ad made them feel more favorable towards Pepsi. Meanwhile, just 41% of whites said the same. The ad didn't do so much for a star, though. Just 28% of respondents said it made them see Kendall Jenner more favorably. According to the media and survey research company Morning Consult, which ran the survey, the ad was pulled by the company hours after it was launched last week after a rush of online criticism over its depiction of an ambiguously apolitical street protest where tensions with police were resolved by ice cold Pepsi delivered by Keeping Up with the Kardashian star. So yeah, 100, because y'all niggas know that shit was bad. Also, you know, you only wrote this article to make it seem like, oh, they should have kept it going. If Pepsi, a big ass company like Pepsi, tests an ad and half of black people don't like it, it's bad. Right. Ain't no ifs, ands, or buts. No ad campaign has 51% in mind. Like, oh, as long as 51% of people like, no, nobody does that. Everybody would say it's an abject failure if you have an ad campaign where most people see it and you don't get a vast majority of people liking it. Fuck out of here. 100.
Same.
Okay. Let's see. In light of bias claims, the Grammys announced some major changes. Solange and Frank Ocean are just two of many artists who have recently called out the Grammys for cultural bias. The American National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences has long been subject to accusations of partiality in the methods employed for deciding who receives a recognition for achievement in the record industry. This perceived bias reached an embarrassing crescendo at the 2017 Grammys when the world watches Adele collected her Grammy for Album of the Year while tearfully proclaiming that Beyonce was its rightful owner. I thought it was her year, Adele reportedly said in a reference to B. What the fuck does she have to do to win Album of the Year? Well, just months after Adele asked the question that we were all thinking, the Grammys has announced their following sweeping changes to their process and procedures. They're switching from snail mail to online voting. Effective this year, the Academy's 13,000 members will be able to vote online. Recording Academy SVP of Awards Bill Freemuth told Billboard that online voting, which has already proven successful for the Latin Grammys, will allow voters on tour to cast their ballots, help prevent voters from filling out their ballots incorrectly, and bring in younger voters. The voting process was previously done by U.S. mail. That's smart, and I actually like that change, especially for younger people. These old motherfuckers probably using that snail mail. Young people are used to going online and shit, and young people are really their opinions matter when it comes to this music shit too, especially for stuff like pop and things of that nature. Songwriters are now eligible to win Album of the Year. Songwriters, producers, engineers, mixers, mastering engineers, and feature artists who are credited with at least one third of playing time on an Album of the Year will win their own Grammys. Previously, songwriters are ineligible.
Wonderful.
Nomination review committees, rap, contemporary, instrumental, and new age. Effective this year, nomination review committees will put in place the rap, contemporary, instrumental, and new age categories. Freemuth said that professionals from the rap industry have vocalized concerns that most of the people being nominated were big names. He went on to say, while they certainly are not saying that those people are at times shouldn't be deserving, maybe not absolutely everything they do is Grammy worthy. 4, expanded definition of the term album. The term album will be extended to tracks with a minimum total playing of 15 minutes and at least 5 distinct tracks, or a minimum total playing time of 30 minutes with no minimum track requirement. The definition will invite greater inclusion in the process, particularly classical, dance, and jazz fields.
I guess they have a tendency to be shorter. Those have a tendency to be the shorter.
Yeah. At any rate, 0 to 100, Karen.
25, because you can't eliminate racism. But I'm glad you're moving in the right direction.
Yeah. It's always 100 anytime you make me think about Beyonce not winning that goddamn Grammy. So 100 for me.
Yeah.
I don't care if you fix it or not. You can't, unless you can historically go back and give my girl her motherfucking Grammy that she earned, both of them.
Come on, y'all.
Then for Album of the Year, then no, I don't care. Seattle police fatally shoot a black Seattle mother and family demands answers. Seattle police on Sunday shot and killed. This is old, but still.
Yeah, these are old, y'all.
Seattle police on Sunday shot and killed a 30-year-old black woman who had called officers to report an attempted burglary and then displayed a knife. Police took three children from the home. The victim's sister says the shooting was unnecessary. Dozens of people attended a vigil Sunday night for a 30-year-old woman fatally shot by police as a department's use of force investigators probe for how officers wound up killing the woman who had called for help. She was black. I mean, that's what happens. Just after 10 a.m. Sunday, Seattle police responded after the woman had called to report an attempted burglary at Magnuson Park apartment. At some point, police said she displayed a knife and two officers shot and killed her. Relatives identified the woman as Charlena Lyles. Family member said she was several months pregnant and had been struggling with mental health issues for the past year. They said she was concerned authorities would take her children, one of whom they said has Down syndrome. Family members arriving about 2 hours later were distraught and questioned why the police shot her. She was tiny, they said, and believed her race, she's African American, was a factor. Because it was. The SPD has confirmed that both officers were white. The hell? Anyway. I just hate it. Honestly, the race of the officer doesn't matter.
No, it does not.
But that part is the media looking for something. Anti-blackness is period. It's in everybody. It doesn't matter what color the officer was. The fact that you allowed a black person less of a chance to survive a situation is racist. It doesn't matter if you're black too. Police detective Mark Jameson said officers were alerted to hazard information in the system at the previous encounter with the woman, which prompted a 2-officer response Sunday morning when she called to report an attempted burglary in her 4th floor unit at the Brentler Family Place Apartments. Officers were confronted by a 30-year-old woman armed with a knife. The department wrote in its web blotter, both officers fired their duty weapon, striking a woman. There were several children inside the apartment at the time of the shooting, but they were not injured. The department said they are being cared for by other family members at the time. Family members said the children were two boys and a girl, ages 11, 4, and 1. Seattle Mayor Ed Murray, in a statement Sunday afternoon, called the incident a tragedy for all involved. My thoughts are with the many people impacted, including three children and responding officers. Murray and the police chief, Kathleen O'Toole, said the shooting will be reviewed by the department's force investigation team and the Office of Professional Accountability. The King County Prosecutor's Office also will review the incident, likely call for a coroner's request. Williams, the grieving sister, wept and yelled epithets outside the apartment, telling reporters Lyles had been shot and killed by police. Another woman, who later said she was a stepsister, Florida Carol, wept uncontrollably and wrung her hands. Williams said her sister had mental health problems and questioned the need for officers to use deadly force. Yeah, you have a mental health episode as a black person, you literally can be killed by the police. Like, just, they show up and it's like bullet time. They don't give a fuck. She said Lyles had been arrested earlier this month by officers responding to another call after she armed herself as protection against her boyfriend. Jameson said she had a pair of scissors during the previous encounter. There's no reason for her to be shot in front of her babies, Williams yelled at the reporters. The Seattle Times shot the wrong one today. King County Jail records indicate Lyles was arrested and booked into jail June 5th for obstruction of public official and two counts of harassment filed in the Seattle Municipal Court. She was released conditionally June 14th. Details of the June 5th incident were not immediately available. Williams said one of the conditions of her release was that Lyles received mental health counseling. That claim could not immediately be confirmed Sunday. Shortly after the shooting, a uniformed police officer was seen cradling a sleeping child outside the apartments. Two other children were in the back of police SUV. Yeah, I mean, 100. I don't know what other score it could possibly be. Same. I mean, it's that same thing. I never know with the police. I'll never be able to trust anything they say.
Yep.
It just is what it is. They killed too many people for me to be like, well, maybe this time, you know. Fayetteville State shows the world exactly why HBCUs matter. The Wall Street Journal, Karen and I both went to Fayetteville State, by the way.
Yes, we did.
The Wall Street Journal this week reports on a recent critical thinking test administered to students from 200 colleges and universities across the country. The College Learning Assessment Plus is designed to show how students are able to use analytical and problem-solving skills to display growth in reading and mathematical comprehension. According to the report, the United States is the middle of the pack in the students' capacity to think independently, a bleak outlook on the future of the nation's workforce development.
Right.
But an interesting statistic emerges from the report. Of the top 68 schools mentioned in the survey, historically black Fayetteville State University placed 30th among the nation's best, with students showing their ability to think flexibly and to communicate solutions effectively. FSU was the only black college included in the survey's final results and was among the respondents to the journal's request for feedback on the test validity. We administer the CLA to Fayetteville State University because the learning outcomes it assesses, critical thinking and written communication, are important to our overall educational mission. A major strength of the CLA goes beyond the multiple choice responses. The performance task component is scenario-based and requires students to analyze multiple types of information and construct an answer. The primary purpose of administering the CLA for us is to guide improvements in students' learning. The scoring rubrics help us identify areas of needed improvement. This summer, for example, 18 faculty members will use the CLA result to redesign courses with the goal of improving students' critical thinking and written communication skills. Since many of our students come to us with underdeveloped critical thinking and written communication skills, the CLA results of first-year students compared to seniors are very useful to us in measuring growth of these skills. However, to measure mastery of these skills by seniors, we have found that faculty-developed assignments that are embedded in their respective disciplines are a more reliable measure than the CLA. John Young, Fayetteville State Provost. No one doubts the United States, at least from test taking perspectives, is a big nation of underachievers and underprepared students suffering from secondary systems broken by discrimination, a lack of resources, and a lack of parent and community involvement. But if the control is that the United States is a nation full of dummies, how could it be that Fayetteville State, a mid-sized HBCU in North Carolina, which a year ago was targeted to have its tuition reduced to $500 per semester and possibly merge with another University of North Carolina system institution?
Not to get off topic, they have been wanting to get rid of Fayetteville State for years. They've been wanting to call it the University of Fayetteville State forever. But go ahead.
They want to call it the University of North Carolina at Fayetteville.
Yeah, at Fayetteville State. That's what they
want to call it. Not even Fayetteville State, at Fayetteville.
Oh, at Fayetteville, right. Mm-hmm. Because they just want to basically get rid of that and just erase the history of it being the HBCU. And the thing about Fayetteville State University is known as a teaching school. It's a very high ranking North Carolina teaching school. And like A&T, you know, a lot of the University of North Carolina system stuff been targeted at A&T also because of the engineering program. It's like they see you specialize in these areas and you pump out high quality people in these areas, and they just want to consume you versus just let you be out there on your own.
Come on. So calling them thugs, call them niggers.
So how could it be a critical thinking outlier? The answer to many would be timeless HBCUs nurture our students, do more with less, instruct the whole student rhetoric. But we should go deeper than that, deeper into the explorations of why HBCUs and race truly matter when it comes to academic and workforce development. It can't be overlooked or understated how curriculum and instruction at HBCUs tend to prepare students for postgraduate work, study, and life in a unique way, especially for African-American students. Take the advantage of Black professors, staff, and mentors out of the equation and consider the way that common academic content is delivered at HBCUs. HBCU students are taught how to think about industry, scholarship, and life from the perspective of the oppressed. They are taught to learn fields like STEM fields, business, communication, political science, and the social scientists, while appreciating the views of these industries through the eyes of the poor and disenfranchised. Learning medicine and social work at an HBCU means learning the importance of bedside manner, research, assessment, and treatment for people of all races who cannot afford and may not be able to appropriately advocate for their own causes. The same goes for political science and law. Journalism is taught to seek and find information in an effort to give voice to the voiceless. Performing arts are taught to communicate history and experience of a marginalized people. Commerce is taught from the angle of aiding communities which do not have equal resources or opportunities to build wealth. Shit, I never even thought about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I know it might sound weird. I remember when I was in economics, like 101, economics 101. I forgot the name of the professor, but the professor, we were talking about like economic and how money affects things and how when people are in poverty, how taxes affects them. And we were talking about like the different tax things. This was years ago, like should you tax according to how much money you make or should you have a flat tax, you know, across the board. And he said something that I never thought of, and he was talking about like a lot of people push flat tax. He said the thing about the flat tax, when you push a flat tax across the board, it affects the poor. Because if you have $100,000 and we do a flat tax, that's one thing. But you got $100, we do a flat tax, that's a lot more your income, and it affects you on a lot higher level, you know. And it's shit like that that I never really thought about. And that's true, they do challenge you to look at things from a different perspective. I know one thing that I particularly loved about going to Fayetteville State was seeing Black professors and actually seeing a lot of minority professors, because not only Black, I've seen a lot of Indian professors, a lot of Asian professors, like all across the board. And you know, it was one of the things that I just loved about it, seeing Black people in leadership position, administrative positions, and things like that, in the doctoral fields and things like that. And I think for me, it kind of opened up my eyes to the possibility of things that I could do.
Yeah, I think what it's just interesting because I never thought about that, but that's obviously how we were taught, and it's also an impact that it's had on our on what we do. I just never thought about the impact on what I do for a living, because so much of what we do here at the Blackout Tips, we end up talking about marginalized people and advocating for them and shit like that. I just never thought about the impact of well, yes, I had, you know, in addition to my parents and stuff, but I also had that confirmed in college as like, you know, and like I, and I don't see it as like doing that. I just see it as like, well, yeah, if you look at the world, you're going to end up being like, oh, isn't it fucked up what we say about women? Isn't it fucked up what we do to black people? Isn't it fucked up what we do to this? Like, you're going to end up asking those questions if you're any type of observer of the world. Is has always been the way I thought about it. But obviously, yes, in college, if I turned in a paper and I thought brought up something about race in my paper, not once did I ever have to worry, like, I hope my professor don't start tripping.
Oh, no, you don't.
I hope they don't say, I hope if I raise my question to ask, raise my hand to ask a question about how race would affect this,
they encouraged
it. Situation. I, like, I've never once felt shamed out of asking about it.
Right.
No one's ever, you know, and at the same time, because it's all black people there, at the same time, you're not able to play the victim, quote unquote. And I'm not saying that's what people do, but I'm just saying, like, sometimes you can get around like a white liberal space and they automatically look down on you or pity you, not out of some like, cause you're a nigger, but like out of some just like, oh, black people have it so hard. I've never met a black, but Sharonda must have it hard. You know what I mean? Or what, like those type of moments where you're like, wait, why do you think I'm not as smart as you? You know, I've never had, like, so you get it both ways. You can never use race as a cop out on some like,
nope,
I'm a black person, it's too hard to turn in this test, because they'll laugh you out of the fucking room.
Right.
But at the same time, I've never turned in something and thought, well, I'm gonna have to ignore the racial aspect of this because I don't want other students or my professor to cop an attitude about it. And sometimes you turn in shit and they be like, what about how this, the racial effect on this? Or what about?
They challenged you.
You know, so yeah, I just never had thought about it, but this, that's obviously, you know, and it also does, when you think of problem solving shit, you also do come at an angle from like, how are we gonna help the most marginalized person in this? Like, what's fair for everybody, not just what's everybody. Fair for me or whatever. I just never thought about it.
Right. And I, and not to get off topic, I know one thing for me in particularly, I guess for me being at Fibble State, it actually showed me how to love my people. And I, you know, because it's one of these things where, yeah, I love my people, but a lot of times when you say your people, a lot of times people think of it from very small perspective. I love my family and my friends, but no, I learned how to love my people because I got introduced to all types of blackness, and all these types of blackness challenges you, come from different backgrounds, different perspectives. And also I think at a lot of HBCUs, we talked about this before, I know at Fibble State, you dealing with people from backgrounds where they're first, a lot of times first and second generations going into this, so their perspectives is going to be very different, and they're thinking about things from a very sometimes impoverished perspective that you might not have gotten, because even though you are black, sometimes you're black and privileged and you don't even realize it.
Yeah. And I mean, I was like, any college, there's still issues and stuff like that, but like I said, I just had never thought about this in the curriculum. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely, that's definitely what it was, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
I never thought about it like that either.
Yeah. Like, I had courses that were just like African Americans in corporate America. Like, that's a course that I had to take. Well, I didn't have to, but I opted to take. I just, you know, I don't know. I guess sometimes I just, I'm just a person, so sometimes I just had these moments where I'm like, fuck, yeah, I guess other people don't have that. Cause, I still have that within me where I think about blackness mostly through my own lens first, and then I'll forget, like, nigga, there's so many different experiences out there. And this isn't to discount anybody that went to a PWI, and this us versus them segment, but there are some positives to going to a HBCU, and I definitely would like to explore those, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The HBCU experience is not just constructed to make students feel comfortable in learning, but to benefit those who may not be able to benefit themselves. Rigorous exposure to diversity, to concepts of finance and management, and social entrepreneurship that are otherwise isn't taught at most predominantly white schools is the hallmark of this experience, and why disparities in earning potential among black and white graduates is out of step with the personal and professional satisfaction HBCU grads feel over the course of their lives. So Fayetteville State, at least in this small sample size, showcasing that HBCU students are among the most adept at critical thinking and problem solving involved, and it's not surprising. Which group has more problems than black folks in this country? Whose prospects at life and liberty in these United States is more critical than those of racial minorities? And if this is the capacity of students at Fairfield State, imagine the capacity of brilliant students at HBCUs across the country. Everyone gets that HBCUs matter, much in the same way that we all can agree that race matters. The narrative gets muddled when resources and perceptions about preferential treatment to get them become involved in the conversation, but the data doesn't lie. Time after time, statistics show that HBCUs deliver the goods on preparing students to live happy, healthier, and wealthier lives. And now it's up to black folks to make the investment in this idea of universal social mandate instead of a dying cultural ideology. Cool. Shout out to HBCU Digest. Mm-hmm. Anyway, zero for me. Cool.
I'm not fucked with it all.
Matter of fact, let's just move straight from that to these white folks.
I know, right?
Let's just not press our luck. Because mm-hmm. I know one more story and it's just going to turn back into good times. let's see.
Damn, James.
Let me share my screen because you know we got to play the song first and y'all got to pretend that y'all hate this moment when y'all really love it. It's funny for us all, but I get it. Nobody wants to pretend they enjoy watching these white folks make a fool of themselves. It's cool. Give me a second to share my screen. Let me close this. Oh wait, don't play yet. I can't share my screen yet. All right, now let me see if I can share my screen. Oh, now it's frozen. Cool. Take your time. All right. Just going to move slow. You know, I have been working you hard today, computer.
For a few hours.
Me and Bossy did get up to hijinks. Maybe I can play some music or a clip or something in the meantime. Let me see what I can hear. Oh, I'm frozen?
No, I'm asking, is that the problem?
Oh, it says not responding okay. On my Crowdcast, so I can't even just refresh. I gotta close it and come all the way back in.
No problem.
Or I gotta wait for it
to catch up.
Oh wait, I think I did this before. I think it was Windows Media Player was acting up.
When you use it in the wrong thing, it's just like, nope.
Well, when Windows Media Player is open for some reason, it doesn't let me share my screen easily.
It interferes.
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, I think that's what it was, because
now you're moving.
Because when I went to close it, the Windows Media Player froze up. So I think that's what it was. Yep, that's what it was. I gotta figure something out with this. All right, should be showing on the screen soon. Let me know if it's showing.
Yeah, they ain't friends.
Crowdcast. What is this? Forget what the name of this is. Chrome and Windows Media Player do not get along. Is it showing up now?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go, guys. Enjoy the ride.
Now let me welcome everybody to the wild. State that's untouchable like Elliot Ness. The track hits your eardrums like a slug to your chest. Grab a vest for your Jimmy.
What?
Rice? What the hell is this?
Pack a vest for your Jimmy in the city of sex.
Make
a
country song.
We in that sunshine state with a bomb ass happy, a place where you'll never find a dance floor empty. And this be on a mission for them greens. Leave me money making machines serving fiends. Been in this game for 10 years, making a fool. Thank you. dressed in loafs and khaki suits and riding smoke with Tupac, but have a caution with the violence.
The Tupac verse was better, but that was crazy. Trizzy trash.
No, it's not in the same. That was California Love for those of you, because I was trying to figure out what the fuck she was singing too.
That was California Hate. Thumbs down.
Two thumbs down. Can I click over here from over here? No.
No. Ugh. All right, let's get into some white people news. No, that's y'all's man. I'm not gonna.
No, we already fucked with. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
Shout out to Malia Obama living her best life out in this world.
What you doing?
Partying at Lollapalooza, getting sloppy drunk, falling on the ground.
That's what I'm talking about.
Cause that motherfucking Trump dude gonna get us in a nuclear war with North Korea, and everybody's gonna say, you know what, Malia had the right idea.
Right.
All right, let's get into the news for white folks. Of course, white folks news. Today, we're gonna consume it with some wine. Triangle Wine Company has a huge selection of fine wine and craft beer from all over the world for every budget. From well-known brands to rare finds from small producers, you can shop online and have your order shipped to your home or workplace. If you live in the Raleigh-Durham area of North Carolina, stop on by their stores for their weekly free wine tasting and beer events. Visit TriangleWineCo.com to compare their competitive prices and save 10% on your order with offer code TBGWT through the end of August. That's right, TriangleWineCo.com, and compare those competitive prices, guys. And what will we be drinking on today? Well, today we were drinking a Serpent. Mm-hmm. Brooklyn Conceive. Thornbridge Brewed, a Belgian-inspired ale, barrel-aged on wild yeast from Oliver's Cider and Perry, a Brooklyn Thornbridge alliance. So I guess this Serpent, like, some type of cider type thing going on here.
Oh, I like cider.
You know what? It counts. I will be drinking this today to go with my white folks. And also, we decided to upgrade the white folks
yes!
news with, what kind is this? We got our own crackers and cheese. That's right, crackers and cheese. Karen, tell them the brand.
We got some toasted buttercrisp crackers, and we got some chipotle gouda cheese.
Chipotle gouda, because when it comes to these white folks, it show tastes gouda to me. Okay. You should have bought your own plate. I'm gonna be handing you cheese all night. I'm gonna get you some of them crackers before we get in these crackers. Wash down some of this Serpent. That's what I'm talking about right there.
Yeah, I've been asking people, give me some suggestions, so I'm gonna mess around and check out some of these cheeses y'all suggested me on Facebook, and somebody said gouda was good, and I like gouda and I like chipotle.
Well, yeah, and we, like I said, wash it down with some of the Serpent from Triangle Wine Co.
Oh, this is delicious.
Isn't it? The cheese, the wine, it's all perfect. And speaking of, Triangle Wine Co., and Serpent, that Serpent Taylor Swift is back in the news. Denver DJ that is accused of groping Taylor Swift in June 2013 flatly denied ever touching her inappropriately in court testimony Tuesday afternoon. Damn, that shit finally went to court. I feel like if you grab a black woman's ass, famous or not, it ain't never going to court.
Mm-mm.
You might get slapped in the face, but I feel like
as far as it's gonna go.
Yeah, like Taylor Swift is like, I will see your ass in court. We will litigate this in the street. Get you 12 white folks. Take this shit to trial.
Come on, take this shit to trial, bitch.
It's what I love about her petty. I know y'all hate her. Mm-mm. I don't have a problem with Taylor. David Mueller, 55, of Denver, also rejected claims by Swift's counsel that he changed his story 7 times and said he did not destroy evidence pertinent to the case. Swift was in court alongside her mother, who cried during opening statements.
Not the right woman tears. You going to jail.
Right?
Her you mom going and that, to jail.
You grabbed my daughter's booty.
Mm-mm.
Asked to explain the impact that the groping claim had on him, Mueller said it cost him his income and his career. He said, it's been hard on my family. It's been hard on my friends. It had an impact on my girlfriend, Melcher. It was hard for her. It was hard for me. He added, it was a humiliating experience to be accused of something that despicable, of grabbing a white woman's butt. He also accused Swift security guards of taunting him about his behavior in the immediate aftermath of the June 2nd incident in front of his girlfriend. Describing the fateful meet and greet, Mueller said he and former flame Shannon Melcher had lined up for approximately 20 minutes before being introduced to Swift. He said the entire episode lasted just 40 seconds and began cordially with Swift shaking both his girlfriend's hands. Now this picture they got though, I mean, like his hand might be on some booty right there. What you think, Karen? Don't that like a booty hand grab?
That's not her waistline.
Right. Like, I mean, maybe his hand wasn't touching some booty, but it's down by the booty area. You know, and white people would, you know, the way white men feel about booties, like, he probably would be all up on some Taylor Swift butt. You know. Mueller says he then complimented her about her interactions with fans, telling the court in Denver, "I was very impressed." Swift then suggested a photo, turning to Melcher and putting her arm around her. Mueller said he then immediately started moving to get in the photo, extending his hand towards the singer, making contact with what seemed to be a rib cage or ribs.
Nah, baby, that's a butt.
Yeah, I mean, if, listen, I don't know, but if you were to ask me, what does Taylor Swift booty feel like? I say a rib cage or some ribs. I mean, maybe it's just me, but she looked very rib cagey in the booty area. Asked if he had touched her bottom by his lawyer, Gabriel McFarlane, he answered no. He added, "Our hands touch and our arms touch. I know our arms crossed and touched." The former radio host also insisted he did not put his hand up her skirt, touching her outside of her clothing and touch her touch her inappropriately in any fashion at all. Mueller said when the photo was taken, he and Melcher left the backstage photo booth area, went to put the signed photos he had been given in the car. When he returned to the arena inside the Pepsi Center approximately 25 minutes later, he was confronted by a security guard, later identified as Greg Dent, Swift's personal bodyguard. According to Mueller, Dent approached him and said, "Do you want to tell me about what happened earlier?" Mueller claims he was initially confused and then denied groping allegations by Dent repeatedly. He says Dent then told him, "Listen, mate, this is serious. I can get the police involved." The DJ told the court Dent clearly had a problem with me and accused another security guard of taunting him by repeatedly asking, "Are you proud of yourself? Are you proud of what you did?" Mueller and Melcher were then escorted out of the Pepsi Center via a staff tunnel and encountered Swiss radio manager Frank Bell en route, who told him he was banned from their gig, from her gigs for life. According to Mueller and Bell, Bell said, "Taylor, Taylor doesn't want you here tonight. You are banned from all future Taylor Swift concerts."
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Later that evening, Mueller says, I wonder if that, like, how do they enforce that? Like, if he buys some tickets on Ticketmaster, it's like, nope, we know your name, you can't come. Mm-hmm. Like, is this picture, like, on the front of every Ticketmaster office?
Ticketmaster, nope, decline that one.
Later that evening, Mueller said he was suspended from his job and fired following a meeting with his boss, Eddie Haskell, and Bob Collin the following day.
Oh, because he's a DJ, so he probably got, like, get the special press passes and all that stuff, access to it. It was like, what you're not going to do is get access to me like this. Like, yeah, you can buy the tickets, but you will no longer be getting up in here for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I guarantee you he probably didn't have to pay for a lot of shit that other people probably would have had to pay for. She was like, you got this access to me. You're not going to touch me like this.
One booty cheek destroyed his whole life.
Come on.
Mm-mm-mm.
One butt cheek at a time.
He also denied accusing Haskell of groping Swift, telling court that Haskell had told him he had grabbed the singer's bottom during a hug the same night, but that he had assumed it was a tall tale. Oh! So it's starting to come, so he was telling people I grabbed her butt before even he was accused of grabbing her butt by security and shit. He's like, yeah, I grabbed her ass too. Then when she was like, hey, you grabbed my ass, all of a sudden he was like, what are you talking about? Why would I ever do such a thing?
He did that shit.
During cross-examination, Mueller was asked by Swiss counsel if he could think of any reason that she might fabricate the story. Yeah, now see, I will say this. A woman as busy and as rich as Taylor Swift is not making time for a court date like this if you ain't grab her booty.
She ain't showing up in person. She ain't rearranging her plans.
Right. She ain't got time for this bullshit. Okay? She got dances to steal back from Katy Perry.
Come on.
Asked repeatedly if he could think of any reason instead of a motor Swift might have engaged in 2 years of litigation with him, he said, I cannot. Yeah, it's been 2 years, bro. We know you grabbed that ass. He also was quizzed about why he chose to sue Swift and her mother over the incident rather than his former employers, with Baldridge intimating that the reason was money. Mueller was forced to concede that he made the groping allegations public by filing his 2015 lawsuit and had no evidence to suggest that Swift had not tried to keep the incident private. Later in proceedings, Baldridge compared Mueller to shock jock Howard Stern, asking him if he would like a similar job, and added, "You'd like to make the kind of money he makes, wouldn't you?" The DJ denied it, saying he was not interested. Baldridge also attacked Mueller over the loss of 5 electronic devices containing recordings on the June 3rd meeting between the DJ and his bosses in the immediate aftermath of the incident. So, phones got missing. Mm-hmm. Like, y'all, you might have sent some video of some booty grabbing, and now all of a sudden everybody phone missing.
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden everybody phone got held up underneath the water for 5 minutes and don't work no more.
Ain't in the cloud no more. Hmm.
Right, the cloud don't got it.
Of the almost 2 hours of audio recorded, the 55-year-old was able to recover just 15 minutes, which he admitted to editing into 19 separate clips. Only 11 of those were handed to Baldridge. Referring to a series of depositions made and lodged with the court last year, Swift's team accused the DJ of lying and pointed out that his former boss had raised concerns over his recollection of the groping incident.
His boss was like, "Dog, you got to go. We believe you did that shit."
According to testimony read out in court, Frank Call has said, "Mr. Mueller said to me, 'I didn't do it, but if I did, it was incidental.'" He changed his story. Mueller was also asked about his relationship with Haskell, his other boss at KYGO, and admitted that he had disliked him. Tuesday's cross-examination concluded with a retelling of events leading up to the alleged groping incident, with Mueller confessing under questioning that he found Swift cold and standoffish. He had also quizzed over statements made in his deposition to the effect that he was left feeling invisible after Swift focused her attention on his girlfriend. Mueller had said, "She didn't acknowledge me when it was time to pose for the photo. She just pulled Shannon in and I was on my own." Okay.
He was creeping.
I mean, and also, what would it matter? Let your girlfriend get her life then. It's fine. Speaking in court, he added, "I was a little alarmed by it. I expect that most people, when they pose for photographs, they expect to get into it." During the opening statements, Mueller testified that he may have touched her rib cage or ribs with a closed hand. He said his hands and arms touched during a meet and greet where he estimated it lasted 40 seconds or less. Swift's counsel hit back at Mueller, telling the jury that the 55-year-old is a liar who has changed his story 7 times and is motivated by money and revenge. Swift avoided making eye contact with Mueller during the proceedings. Addressing the court in Denver, Colorado, Douglas Baldridge said, "David Mueller, a 51-year-old DJ, grabbed my 23-year-old client's rear end, plain and simple. It's an assault, not inappropriate touching, and assault, and Taylor Swift reported it." He added, "She has done hundreds of meet and greets and nothing like this has ever happened before." That's another good point. What motivation would she have to make up that someone, after years of interaction with her precious fans, will do what happened? She is absolutely certain that David Mueller grabbed her rear end. This man grabbed her rear end. By contrast, McFarlane painted a picture of a man who has lost his dream job and is destined to restore his good name. That he said Mr. Mueller was really excited to attend Swift's June 2nd, 2013 concert, but wasn't really excited, but went because his boss expected him to, and it was part of the job. And the DJ and his then girlfriend Shannon Melcher met Swift in a small curtain room dubbed the photo booth and introduced themselves to the singer as being from the radio station KYGO. McFarlane says Swift suggested they take a photo, but claimed Mueller was taken by surprise thanks to her speed, and so he jumped into the frame, touching her rib in the process. The resulting picture, which was shown to jurors by both sides, was described by McFarlane as awkward, but he insisted there was no visible evidence that the radio host's hand was beneath her skirt, as she claimed. Mueller's counsel also said that other people in the room did not see anything happening, including Swift's bodyguard, who was stationed behind the trio as the picture was taken. According to the 55-year-old, this is so much writing for a booty grab.
Scroll up.
Mm-hmm.
Scroll down, sorry.
Down?
Yes, it says, up, down. Go down. Go down to the next picture. Not that picture, but the one after.
After this? What picture are you talking about?
The one with the people standing in line. Oh, wait a minute.
Okay, I think we're on the delay. This one?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on a public curfew room, starts at 6 a.m. Her fans stood in line to actually see.
You're right. And they smiling. They happy as fuck to be out there at 6 a.m.
It's like they got tickets to a show.
Right? They're like, "Is she going to sing?"
They're like, "Girl, we're going to be there at 6, right?" "Yeah, we're going to be there at 6.
Mm-hmm. They hoping she going to call Kanye and make up a lie.
Right.
Anyway, man, this nigga lying. He grabbed that booty.
Oh, he grabbed that. He grabbed them white booty cheeks.
They wrote a lot about that. I only read like less than half the article, I think.
Y'all,
this
cheese is flames. This cheese is crackling.
Malia Obama, as I was telling y'all, 19 years old, lost her iPhone at Lollapalooza while dancing wildly to The Killers. And the Apple Store couldn't help because the White House set up her account.
Oh.
Malia Obama gained a lot of attention with her wild dance moves at Chicago's Lollapalooza Music Festival, but lost her phone in the process. The 19-year-old was filmed thrashing around on the ground during The Killers set at the festival on Friday night. Unfortunately, that resulted in her misplacing her phone, requiring a visit to an Apple Store, accompanied by watchful Secret Service agents.
Imagine that. The Apple Store had to clear out. Yeah. Fucking said it was like, what you gonna do is take a bite of this apple and everybody get the fuck out the store.
Wildflower is secure. Wildflower is secure. I guess it's the video of her dancing. I don't get it. She's just running around with her friends. Man, you know what it is, dog. She must just got some trash ass friends, dog. Like all her, everything she do end up on the internet, and every time she go out and shit, it's like her friends are really infatuated with the fact that she's Malia Obama. And they can't wait to fucking post to social media like, I'm hanging out with Malia Obama. Cause Sasha,
you don't see nothing.
Sasha got that group of black friends. You don't never see Sasha doing nothing.
Right.
Like they know to keep their shit off. They like, girl, you could be somebody someday.
Right.
These white people put her business in the street. Malia came into the Apple Store to get her iPhone replaced, but things didn't go exactly as planned, a source told the site. The Apple Store couldn't immediately help her because she didn't have the Apple ID or password for the missing phone since the White House set it up. Phone calls are likely occurring all over Washington as the Obamas try to obtain the correct details. Malia, whose classes at Harvard start up again in just a few short weeks, was seen in the video obtained by TMZ dancing wildly with a gal pal on Friday as the Las Vegas rock band played its hits. In early footage, Malia's friend throws herself on the ground while Obama's daughter jokingly pretends to play the drums, playing her moves with the music. She then helps her friends up before they turn the rest to watch the rest of the show, but the party was far from over. Footage later captured Malia taking her turn to writhe and roll in the grass, thrashing around before the head banging, pounding the ground before doing a guitar riff.
She's doing normal shit.
Right. She's a kid. Malia and her friends reportedly spent most of the time backstage during The Killers before going to the grassy area to dance. Social media users have been quick to defend the teenager for letting loose and having fun with her friends. Well, there's nothing to defend, really. Like, y'all, the people that are attacking this are also people that love Trump. I mean, y'all ain't got shit to say about no class and deplorum and shit. I don't want her.
Hear it all. Somebody asked her, it was Secret Service, baby. They were less than a foot away from her rolling, believe you me.
Wow. How shameful. She's at a concert as a 19-year-old having fun and dancing.
Like what all a disgrace. These other white children out here.
What a disgrace. You know how kids be dancing? You never, oh God. It's so, so dishonorable. Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of black people was like, you know, I'm cool with it on Twitter and shit. They also had video of her leaving. And like Secret Service had her in the golf cart and they was like, she was passed out, but she just looked sleepy and tired. I don't know.
Yeah, I would be too. I'm trying to tell you, enough videos by me get out there. You been hanging with me by like Secret Service taking all y'all phones.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't better not a narrate another fucking picture of me or audio of me go out on this. I consent to it.
Mm-hmm. The Young Turks getting that guap, Karen.
Apparently so.
Left-leaning political video network, the Young Twerks, because that's how they was getting that money rained on them.
Come on.
They raised $20 million, y'all. $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
The money is fucking up the politics. Bernie is the only choice.
Come on.
But somehow, some way, they got $20 million. $20 million, y'all. But Hillary Clinton corrupt.
Come on.
Y'all got.
Why y'all didn't vote for Bernie? Bernie's the answer. He mocked MLK.
Y'all to cry to big media, mainstream media money. Well, you look like you got money to me, boy. Jeffrey Katzenberg, investment venture, WonderCo also participated. Former MSNBC anchor Sink Ungers Sink. The Young Turks Network and the Young Turks Network raised $20 million in a new funding round that was led by 3L Capital, Graycroft, eVentures, and WonderCo. Jeffrey Katzenberg's venture firm also participated in the company's first institutional investment round. TYT will use the investment to expand its roster of management and creative talent, enhance its subscription offering, expand market initiatives, and strengthen content and community engagement, the company said in a statement. In 2000,
they will. I wonder how many brown people they're going to employ that they don't actually listen to.
Well, yeah. In 2014, the Young Turks received a $4 million convertible note from Romer, Robinson, Melville & Co., a private equity fund run by Buddy Romer, who is a Republican former governor. The company raised a $4.25 million Series A funding round the following years. Mm-hmm. So, former Republican, giving $4 million. I mean, what kind of news is he expecting you guys to do?
Come on.
I mean, I would hate for it to be the appearance of a conflict of interest. I would hate that. I mean, isn't that the problem with that you guys have with Obama and Hillary Clinton and the mainstream media and Joy Ann Reid and all these people that y'all are constantly tallying on? I guess it's different when it's your money, though. I guess it's just different when it's your money. It's like, no, I can trust me with this money. Y'all just can't trust them with their money. More recently, in the wake of the presidential election, the network hit a $2 million funding goal to hire more investigative journalists. And what if they investigated and found for us? What's the big scoops they broken? The Young Turks is approximately 30,000 paying subscribers and produces $3.6 million in yearly subscriber revenue, the Hollywood Reporter has previously reported. As did the Young Turks plan to raise additional funds, Sink told THR, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it, or if we get to it. This is plenty for the foreseeable future. Hey, man, y'all came up, man. Mm-hmm. You came up on some money by questioning everybody else's money.
Come on.
Good for you.
Get that guap, though.
Get the guap, nigga. I get the guap. Why did British glamour model go shoe shopping with her abductor? Italian media questions 6-day ordeal of beauty auction as sex slave on dark web as it emerges she knew the monster who took her. So apparently a British model got kidnapped and supposedly auctioned off by some nefarious folks. But they brought her back. A British model who was kidnapped, drugged, stuffed into a suitcase and held captive for 6 days. He was auctioned on the dark web as a sex slave was taken on a shopping trip for shoes by her abductor. Let me tell you something.
You want to look nice.
Let me tell you something. This is one of the good reasons. You know, this is why I like them big girls. Okay. You can't just stuff them in no suitcase. Ain't gonna kidnap my bae.
Mm-mm. You wanna be able to zip that bitch up?
Mm-hmm. Karen losing all his weight. She might fit in one now, but.
I never fall, no.
Just saying. That's why I got eating this cheese.
I know. Y'all can't stuff me in the oven.
Mm-hmm. Chloe Aileen, who also previously met her kidnapper, Polish odd job man. What is an odd job man? Our job sound like you ain't got no job.
Come on. Is that the same as a social butterfly?
Right. Polish odd job man Lukasz Herba. During a business trip to Paris earlier this year, a friend has revealed Herba, 30, later paid her agent cash for a 20-year-old model to fly out to Milan for the fake photo shoot where she was injected with horse tranquilizer ketamine, forced into a suitcase, and chained to furniture for 6 days.
Shit.
She was finally released July 15th when Herba accompanied her to British consulate in Milan after claiming the Black Death white slavery gang had kidnapped her by mistake because she was a mother.
What?
I don't understand. What's up with these pictures?
It's confusing to me too.
I guess this the dude that kidnapped her. Jesus, you hung out with that nigga like a vampire. I wants to drink your blood.
No, thank you.
And then I guess this is just a picture of her from the Instagram and shit. A close friend of Miss Ayling told the Mail Online, I can't say too much because Chloe is being debriefed by British police and the Foreign Office, but she did know the man who kidnapped her. She met him in April in a photo shoot after she had been on in Paris. He then called her agency and booked her for the photo shoot in Milan. He specifically asked for her. He seemed genuine. He sent previous examples of his work and paid in advance. The source added, during the kidnapping, Chloe lost her shoes. He took her to buy some new shoes for her during her ordeal. Miss Ayling is said to have met Erba after she was caught up in a terrorist shooting of a policeman in Paris in April. How was she caught up in a terrorist shooting? So everything about this story just makes more questions.
Mm-hmm.
The young British model told how she was walking along the Champs LC when the incident unfolded. She watched the police as police and ambulances rushed to the scene before she retreated to her hotel. Her agent Phil Green said at the time, Miss Ayling's mysterious shopping trip, her previous encounter with her abductor Erba, and other strange details of the case led the Italian media to raise questions about the Britain's testimony. The Italian press have questioned her kidnapper, Erba, a Polish national who lives in Oldbury, West Midlands, would accompany Miss Ayling into the British consulate in Milan. Miss Ayling told detectives there were four or five kidnappers, but only two alleged kidnappers are currently under investigation. Questions have also been raised about how the ketamine was injected into her right arm when she was wearing a long sleeve pink leather jacket. Leading national newspaper La Repubblica claimed Miss Ayling burst into tears when police investigators asked her about the shoe shopping trip. The newspaper reported today that the kidnapping was real or that she was doped with ketamine is not put into question by the investigators, but it's also tremendously true that the many details do not add up. Starting with a question about the police investigator, that the police investigators suddenly asked Chloe, causing her to cry. But don't you think it's strange to go and buy shoes with your kidnapper? Because that also happened. And of course, the shop assistant identified by the cops recognized her and recognized the person she calls MD, Herba. Italian press agency AGI highlighted other aspects of her testimony. It reported today she tells police that there were at least five kidnappers, but the investigators believe there are only Erba and his brother. The kidnappers make an injection in the right forearm, even though she is wearing a long sleeve pink leather jacket. Erba gives her a business card with a contact email address to contact for the information, and that she should have the mass media to advertise to Black Death. Miss Ayling left her home in Colesden, South London today to meet police and foreign office officials, according to her agent Phil Green. Meanwhile, a man from Birmingham claims he was handed a business card by Erba featuring a picture of the Grim Reaper with the words permanent solution. An email address on the back references the letters MD, and that's what she refers to her, what she was said she was ordered to call him. The card was reportedly given to a man in Birmingham City Center offering dark web services, according to The Sun. Back in the UK yesterday, after she was freed by the group, the mother of one said, I've been through a terrifying experience. I fear for my life, second by second, minute by minute, hour by hour. She added, a person wearing black gloves came from behind, put one hand on my neck and one on my mouth to stop me from screaming. A second person wearing a black balaclava gave me an injection on my right forearm. Her official statement said, I think I lost consciousness when I woke up. I was wearing a pink bodysuit and socks I am wearing now. I realized that I was in the boot of a car with my wrists and ankles handcuffed, adhesive tape to my mouth. I was inside a bag. I was only able to breathe through a small hole. The model said the gang were forced to stop the hatchback every 45 minutes because of continuous moans and movement in the bag. Investigators said the victim was kept shackled to a wooden chest of drawers at the farmhouse in Borgiao, a hamlet near Turin. She was forced to sleep on the floor in a sleeping bag. Police say she was not raped. Erba allegedly told the landlord of the rural property he was a painter in search of inspiration and that he had found the right spot. Everything about this story sounds crazy.
Yes, sir.
Ooh, I don't know what happened to who. This sounds like some Making a Murderer season 3 shit. I don't know.
Right.
Like, Netflix, get on this. Help us find out what happened.
Come on.
What else these white folks up to? Former Fox guest says she was harassed by suspended host Eric Bolling, who called her Dr. McHottie.
Not McHottie.
That's some white shit. And invited her into his office, which he said was his favorite place to have sex.
At the workplace.
Man, I'll tell you what went. Did how much time? No wonder the news at Fox News is so bad. They don't got time to do no news. They trying to fuck these young hot white women
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They got 24 hours a day to do it. That's why
they're like, we could be looking up the details of this story, or we could just make it up and try to finger bang Miss McHottie over here. Like, I would take some time out to tell you the details of what's going on with Donald Trump in this White House, but I'm trying to get into a different type of whiteness, if you know what I'm saying, guys. A Fox News guest who says she was sexually harassed by Bill O'Reilly claims she was also on the receiving end of unwanted advances made by the network's now suspended host Eric Bolling. Oh, he's suspended too? Damn.
Yeah, they taking him down. I think he has several women, if I'm not mistaken, with him.
What's the point of being, how you spend more time suspended than you spend working it over there? Like, as much dirt as these motherfuckers get up to, Jesus, save some for the fish. Just trying to fuck all the white women's, man.
Yeah, they all look alike. They are very generic looking, in my opinion.
Now we know why they look alike.
Yeah, I mean,
they got a type.
Yeah, I mean, when I mean generic, like, they all look alike. They all, you know, tall, long flowing hair, like, kind of a small frame. Like, they like those type of women. And somebody said that was a type, and that's the only type. You don't see no heavy set women on their staff. You don't see no big women. You know, I don't even know if they have a woman of color that's actually on the staff that you see in front of the cameras.
Some of these women not even on the staff. They just people that show up.
Right.
I ain't got no type. News bitches is the only kind that I like.
Apparently it is.
Caroline Heldman, a 44-year-old associate professor of politics at Occidental College in Los Angeles, made hundreds of appearances on Fox between 2008 and 2011, many of which were on Bolling's show Bulls and Bears. Maybe he meant the other kind of bulls. Mm-hmm. The black kind.
He gonna be her bear all over her, apparently.
Meanwhile, between appearances, she claimed Bolling, 54, who was suspended from his co-hosting role on The Specialist last week.
He gonna specialize in that ass.
He was specializing in something. For allegedly sending photographs of his genitals to several female colleagues. The old dirty dick pic, hey? Called and texted her to invite her to New York to have fun. On one occasion, when she was in town, he took her into his office and told her it was his favorite place to have sex. He called her Dr. McHottie on air, and she said he would sometimes call her afterwards to apologize and then do it again. Yeah, because he didn't really want to apologize. That was his move. Oh, big tits over here. Ha ha, Tits McGee. Oh, and then afterwards, you know, that was very inappropriate.
You know, old bitches over there, girl.
Yeah, it was very inappropriate what I did, unless you're going to let me hit that. If not, then I apologize and I'll never do it again until next week.
Or until I have you as a guest again.
Heldman made her accusations in a lengthy Facebook post on Saturday, in which she also claimed that several other women received similar treatment from him. My only surprise that it took this long for people to come forward about Bolling's behavior, which has been wildly inappropriate for years. During one appearance in 2011, when Heldman was taking part in a panel discussion on union workers, he referred to her as the great Dr. McHottie. I pushed back against Mr. McSexist, but I shouldn't have to, Heldman said on Saturday, adding, this on-air behavior was perfectly acceptable for Fox executives at the time. Bolling denies ever making inappropriate unsolicited contact with her. His attorney, Michael Bowe, told the DailyMail.com on Monday, Mr. Bolling never had any interactions with Ms. Heldman or of a sexual nature, and any such accusation would be false and defamatory. Bolling herself later tweeted that he himself later tweeted that he was overwhelmed by the support he was receiving since being suspended by Fox. Who are these people that support whatever.
Yeah, you know they are. All he got to do is be like, you know what, I ain't got to come back. Start his own podcast network, get a few of his friends over the other suspended folks, and they can have their own network and probably make more money than Fox.
That's just weird, because like, who are the people that come out of the woodwork to be like, Eric, brother, we praying for you.
Somebody just, is.
Lord, lay hands over this man as he sends his penis all over the internet to all his co-workers and friends. Lord, we ask that you just put a spirit of healing over Brother Eric as it slaps that sausage and greases it up before he takes a picture and gets the right lighting, Lord. We just ask this today that you give the right lighting to his penis, Lord, and may it be supple and mm-hmm. but not too rigid. And may it also may it not be chafed, the Lord. We ask that you lift this brother up so that he doesn't lose his job, so he can send his penis many a time to many different people all over the globe. We ask this in Jesus' name. Anyway, thank everybody for support. Then he was suspended on Saturday after several female Fox employees came forward to claim he sent them unsolicited photographs of his genitals. On a statement on Monday, a Fox spokesperson said the network was investigating Heldman's claims as part of its ongoing probe into his alleged misconduct.
Mm-hmm. Well, they walk in the room, he'd be like, "Where do you see my dick?"
Right?
Hey, bitch. See my dick? I'm gonna beat that pussy off like wham, wham, wham. They're like, "What? What is this? Why is this beat dropping?"
Mm-hmm.
Confusing the hell out of white women.
Right? Hey, Dr. McHattie, we appreciate you coming on to, what's the name of his show? Bears and Bulls or some shit, or The Specialist or whatever. Like, coming up next on The Specialist.
Yes!
When we get back from break, I'm gonna show Dr. McHattie what it do in these streets. Can I talk to you in my office for a second?
Right.
Did I tell you something? It's my favorite place to have sex.
You heard what I said. We need to make our way to the bed. You can start using your head. You like the book. Have your legs open out in the book. Do it up.
You know what? I apologize for what I said on the air. Calling you Dr. McHattie. I was absolutely wrong for that shit. And it'll never happen again. Unless...
Check your phone, girl.
Hold on, I got a text from Eric. What is wham, wham, wham? What is this?
It just says wham, wham, wham. Oh,
no, it's a moving dick. It's just bobbing back and forth.
It's in the GIF. I don't understand.
Mm-mm-mm. This nasty ass motherfucker.
Some fruiting them white women to death. They don't know what's happening.
Who sent, listen, he didn't just, this is how prevalent it must have been in their workplace.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't just, like with her, he didn't even send a dick pic. You realize she's coming back on the other end of this being like, he also harassed me. He was sending his co-workers dick pics. Bruh.
Because they've been doing this for years. Imagine the women that's left and we'll never hear about them because they don't want to deal with it no more. But I guarantee you, over the years, they probably have hundreds, possibly thousands of women that have left the company that just won't say shit because they don't want to be called whores and bitches and sluts for coming out and saying that these niggas did this shit to them.
Or they settled with them and they got right. money to be silent.
Or they settled with them, right.
I bet he got a wife. I bet he married. Eric Bowling. Let me see. Eric mm-hmm. Bowling.
Got kids too,
probably. Wife. Man, white people ain't shit, boy. Mm-mm-mm. Ain't shit. Adrian Bowling. Yep. He got a wife, dog.
Oh, he sure did.
Been married since 1997.
Woo! I graduated from high school that year.
Look at her. And she's pretty too, man. She looked just like all them women he sent his dick to. He just got a type. Blonde with some big old titties.
Oh, yeah, she's very pretty.
And then he'd be like, let me see. Where do you see my dick?
Come on.
Hey, bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm-mm. This dude. Boy, I tell you.
He probably on the usher board at his church and everything.
Right.
Get communion every Sunday.
Yep. Let's play another selection from the choir. Eric, would you like to lead us in a song. Oh, I got the perfect song. Thank you, Brother Eric, for that selection. But yeah, they are investigating the matter. You guys know how it is. Investigating the matter. If the women have pictures of dicks on their phone sent from him.
Come on.
Matter open and closed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, of course his lawyer is saying none of it's true. Hellman was among a handful of women.
You started the session.
Oh shit, my bad. How long were we off?
It just flipped over.
My bad. I was keeping an eye on it too.
Mm-hmm. I good.
My mistake. Wham. Let me play this song till we get back. But I ain't gonna sweat. You see, I wanna fuck. Tell me where's up. Walk around the globe with your thumb in your mouth. Put my dick in. Take your thumb out. There might be a little kosher to deal with. Wet bag goes wrong cause they don't spill shit. I keep all wide when I'm putting in work. You wanna skeech, skeech, you gotta get your feelings hurt. Cause I beat that cat with a dog. And knock the walls off a brawl to squall. Like, yeah, something like that. But it depends on the swing of the baseball bat. Fuck the bitch on the counter, make the place fall back. On the floor, she ain't standing cause she nothing. So they crack, crack, crack. Fuck that bitch, no, I'ma get your smack back. Wait till you see my dick.
Hey. Theme song, apparently.
On Saturday, she called him how, recall how creepy he is in person and claimed that once told her, when I was in college, professors didn't look like you.
Oh shit.
He then called me hysterical during the show, edited the interview, and retaliated by never having me on the show again. What do you think's gonna happen? I don't know. Here's the thing about the Fox thing. I hate to blame the victims, but I have to blame the victims a little bit here. Just a little bit. Why do y'all go over there dealing with the motherfucking devil? These niggas are the devil. This is, if Satan had a news channel, it's this channel. And y'all motherfuckers go over there and then be surprised when they're not professionals. They are, they advocate what they live their raps.
Yeah, I do.
They are living their raps over there. They don't respect women. They don't respect black and brown people. And anytime I see another person in the lawsuit, like, guess what? I'm black and Fox News always treated me wrong. Duh. Of course they did. Of course they did. You work for Satan Inc. Yes. They might not treat you good over there. Oh, goodness. He called me in the previous interview. She claims he had been blacklisted by O'Reilly after fighting back on his alleged harassment. She said it torpedoed her career. And April Hellman said she filed a complaint against O'Reilly with Fox hours before he was ousted. She also claimed to have witnessed inappropriate behavior from Gene Simmons and Lenny Dykstra. She said she had to once console a makeup artist who had been harassed by Simmons. Concluding the lengthy post on Sunday, she wrote, "There are a lot of great people working at Fox, many of whom I admire and respect to this day, but there's also cultural sexual harassment that has not fully been addressed. I have faith that given recent decisions to fire, suspend the perpetrators, the new manager will effectively shift this culture." On Sunday, Hellman told NBC's Joy Reid she continued to appear on the network because she interrupted the script. "You want to work. This is your life's work. You have spent years gaining expertise, so you can do this. I particularly wanted to do this at Fox, even though it's a lot harder than the networks I've been on, because I wanted to interrupt the script. So for me, it was my life's passion, and my life's passion was cut short because of sexual harassment. And had I spoken out about it, would have been cut short years earlier." In May, Hellman claimed in court documents that producer and TV executive Woody Fraser claimed he pressured her for both the relationship and sex. Oh, damn. Fraser was a friend of the late network boss Roger Ailes, who died in May after being engulfed by accusations of sexual assault. He hired Ailes to appear on the Mike Douglas Show and later claimed it was the best hire of his career. Hellman described the man as a mentor to her, but said he refused to give her a contributor role on Fox despite her countless appearances, unless she agreed to an arrangement whereby she could pay him for it with sex. Mr. Fraser insinuated on several occasions that a contributorship at Fox was contingent upon me having a sexual relationship with him. Even though I was a popular guest with numerous appearances and high ratings, according to Mr. Fraser, I was not offered a contributorship because I rebuffed Mr. Fraser's sexual advances, she said in a legal statement. Her statement was part of a separate lawsuit filed by other women who say they were at one stage sexually harassed by him. Fraser, 82, filed a preemptive statement denying the accusation before they filed their suit. He knew it was coming.
Yes, he did.
He claimed he was a victim of a calculated attempt to ruin his career. Oh, all y'all? Mm-hmm. Just all of y'all?
Everybody over there ruined everybody's career?
He lashed out at star attorney Lisa Bloom, who represents his accusers. Shout out to Lisa Bloom, getting that work.
Getting that guap.
Accused her of taking the issue to the media to try to land a large cash settlement from him and his alleged victims. Hellman is an advocate for rape victims and spearheads a campaign to do away with California's statute of limitation in rape cases. She joined Bill Cosby's accusers at his sexual assault trial in Pennsylvania in June. I guess. Man. They are some trash over there at Fox.
Come on.
Let's see what else we got. A bikini clad Chloe Green and hot felon Jeremy Meeks share a sizzling kiss in the sea as they continue to parade their controversial romance during another holiday in Barbados.
Is this the same woman he was messing with before, or this a different lady?
Oh, it's the billionaire heiress, Karen.
Oh, she must really like him then.
Their romance has sparked controversy since they were spotted kissing on a yacht last month, but Chloe Green shrugged off the criticism over her relationship with hot felon Jeremy Meeks to enjoy a romantic jet ski ride with her beau in Barbados on Saturday.
Can we see?
Oh, am I not? Oh, yeah. Hold on. You know what's funny about this? This nigga got kids, a wife. What the fuck?
He like, new girlfriend, who you?
You know what I mean? Like, he got a wife and kids. I mean, his kids can't go to the beach. Mm-mm. Kids gotta look in the paper every day, see daddy jet skiing around the country with this woman. Mm-hmm. The billionaire top shop heiress and convict turned model flaunted their new romance as Chloe, 26, clung onto Jeremy's muscular shoulders aboard their speedy ride. The bikini clad socialite.
He's really giving her something, cause honey.
Something she could feel.
Apparently so.
She don't care. She's 26 and rich. Why would she? She don't need him to make her feel nothing.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't think it's like, oh, he laying it down. She just think he looked good and it's sensationalistic and everybody's giving her attention and she don't care about who she hurts, his family, his kids.
No. She don't care.
The bikini clad socialite looked relaxed and happy as she lovingly cradled her new boyfriend, 33. Aboard the jet ski, placed her head on his shoulder and slicked her waist length locks back. She wore a geometric print bikini under her life vest, which showed off her tan and tone pins and showcased her natural beauty by going makeup free. Hunky Jeremy shot a pensive look, no doubt home from his modeling, as he stared into the distance.
What's up with them shorts? Them kitty cat tigers? What's happening with them shorts?
Tigers.
Them ugly.
Tiger in the sack on that billionaire heiress. I know he walked around like this.
See, this is why I'm not high fashion, because I'm like, what the fuck is this?
He can never go back now.
I'm like, if you don't get Tony off my shorts,
you giving her them billionaire strokes now, bro. Don't settle. You can't go back to pay less pussy, not after this, bro.
You sure can't.
You gonna be a male gigolo insta thought? You better make sure you never step. Yeah, you can only fuck like it's like five women on the earth you can fuck now. you can only go up from here, bro. He showed off his,
because anybody else is down, ain't it?
Yeah, you gotta fuck like Beyonce, Oprah. I don't know who else got money out here. You gotta steal Bill Gates' wife. I don't know. You gonna have to do something. He showed off his strapping and heavily inked physique in a pair of tiger embellished swim shorts, which were slung low on his hips. The muscular clothes horse. That, never heard that phrase.
What is this race? What's happening?
Later gave in to selfie temptation. He was spotted taking yet another snap of himself while pulling a quizzical look on the beach. He flaunted his many inklings as he flaunted. Wait, did y'all just say that twice? God damn it, Daily Mail. Look up some vocabulary words. He flaunted his many inkings as he flaunted his strapping frame on the white sand. Here they go kissing on, oh, he made her kiss him on the cheek. He's like, no, on the cheek, baby. Okay, you didn't pay for mouth. That's an extra billion. Here they go walking down the beach together.
Oh.
Yep, look at that home wrecker. Just taking that woman's husband. Chloe looked utterly body confident as she paraded her stunning tone frame on the beach.
I would be body confident too, whether she a duchess, whatever the hell she is. I'd be body confident too, no matter what I look like.
Her envy-inducing abs and perked bust were on full display as she enjoyed the sandy stroll. The couple are in Barbados to attend the Raucous Crop Over Festival, which is much loved by A-listers like Rihanna, where Jeremy is making a public appearance. Oh, we know Rihanna love it. We seen her outfit. Their PDA
festival. I don't know what the hell she was doing, but honey, she looked like a peacock, and I was here for it.
Mm-hmm. I love to pee my cock up in that. You guys know what I'm saying? No, that didn't make sense. Okay, just me.
You talking about my puns is bad.
The PDA comes just 2 days after Chloe proved that she was feeling proud of her budding romance, as she shared a sweet selfie with the hot felon 33 enjoying a day out in the sunshine on Friday. With the couple scantily clad and cozied up to one another, they looked in great spirits as they smiled for the camera. The Chop Shelf heirs captioned the snap, "Life is too short," spelled wrong, "not to laugh and smile, and that is all we do," at J Meeks Official. Hashtag no hate, just love. Hashtag everyone deserves to be happy. It's love now, dog. Oh man, this is so sad. Meeks and Chloe, who is the heir to her father Sir Philip's billions, were pictured sharing an intimate kiss last month and snuggled up to each other as they waited to be taken back to their 112,000-pound a week yacht in Bodrum. Last week, Jeremy filed for legal separation from mother of three, Melissa, who he shares her youngest son with and stayed with him through his 8-year prison stint. And when he get on, you leave your ass for a billionaire white girl. He was married to the nurse who stayed with him throughout his stint in prison for 8 years. His heart broken estranged wife Melissa, mother of to his 7-year-old son, removed reference to him on her social media bio.
Oh, she was like, oh, I'm single. I ain't no way it's complicated. Mm-mm, you no longer here.
Yeah, 26-year-old rich woman come along with billions of dollars at her disposal. It's gonna be hard to keep it.
Yeah, I mean, hey,
it's weird because like he not even these, I mean, no, these pictures don't even look that intimate, you know what I mean? Like it looked like she paid for escort. Like he's touching her like in the small of the back, he's like constantly escorting her with like a foot, and it's like she's saying, there's cameras over there, hold my hand, Jeremy.
Wouldn't be surprised me if that really is what she's saying.
She later told the Mail of her devastation, claiming her husband has been seduced by the glamour of his newfound modeling career. I know it takes two to tango, but she knew he was married to me. That's unforgivable. My whole world has been torn apart by this. What do I tell our children? My heart is broken. What sort of woman would do something like this to another woman? My marriage wasn't perfect, but I thought it could be saved until this happened. Well, let me tell you something. If your marriage was in trouble and Jeremy Meeks was involved, someone was gonna steal this nigga sooner or later. I seen what them women were saying. They didn't care he was doing a bid. They was like, I don't give a fuck. He can be Lawrence and sit on my couch all damn day for all I care. Of course I'm angry at her. What she did is unforgivable. I'm angry at him too. What they did destroyed my entire world. Did either of them think about the children and how this will affect them? They're the innocent victims in this, and so am I. Melissa is mother to his biological child, Jeremy Jr., 7, and Robert, 11, Melissa's son from a previous relationship. She also has a daughter, 16-year-old Ellie, and says both stepchildren consider Meeks a father figure.
Well, they watching him online now.
Yeah, hopefully they follow his gram.
Come on.
And they can see what daddy's up to. Chloe was forced to delete her Instagram following the shocking images after followers trolled a gloating post she shared as she snuggled up to marry Jeremy. She then returned to social media site claiming her settings to private, changed her settings to private, but has since deleted that account. While Meek also edited his account at the time, deleting all photographs of him and his estranged wife Melissa, he has now gone one step further by giving other Instagram users the inability to comment under his snaps.
Yep.
Oh yeah, he loving the fame. Mm-mm-mm.
He said, what y'all not gonna do is comment.
Mm-hmm. Damn, Jeremy out here living that life.
Living this life like it's golden. Living this life like it's golden.
I'm gonna need more wine for these hijinks.
Right?
Jillian Michaels reels from harsh vacation after chartering 50-60K yacht to sail Amalfi Coast, only to have crew hold her for the ransom because of mafia in Capri.
Jillian Michaels is on Biggest Loser. I know this white woman.
Jillian Michaels is stranded in Italy after chartering a 60K yacht to sail the Amalfi Coast because the crew demanded more money due to mobsters in Capri. The Biggest Loser star is currently holed up in a hotel with members of her family after a luxurious vacation took a disastrous turn. Michaels says she hired a pricey yacht to cruise around the coast for 12 days, only to find out the boat was disgusting and had no hot water or Wi-Fi and had electrical problems. The 43-year-old trainer and the crew demanded more money for fuel on the third day of the trip because the gas cash had been drained by mobsters in Capri. Michaels shared details of the harrowing experience on her Facebook page and wrote, "Things became so escalated, we literally feared for our safety." And she got pictures of the boat.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a luxury yacht. This is pretty bad, I will say that.
That's a lot of money for that.
Michaels took the vacation with friends, family members, and her daughter after finding pictures of the boat online, looking through an online company. Michaels is currently in a hotel and attempted to contact the FBI and the State Department out of fear for her safety, but she had no luck because they don't give a fuck. They're like, "What, nigga, just take a cab and go home." She took the news outlet, she told the news outlet the yacht broker explained to her that the money was for gas and it was gone because of mafia and Capri. When she didn't pony up extra cash immediately, the crew allegedly refused to take her ashore, only doing so when she paid them. She wrote in a lengthy Facebook post, "The boat was shown in pictures as pristine. It was not only filthy, but it had no hot water, no air conditioning when not docked, no Wi-Fi, partial electricity. It was clearly in total disrepair." She continued, "By the third day of our charter, we were being exploited for money and things came so escalated, we literally feared for our safety. Bottom line, this stuff is no joke. We could lose a lot of money and that sucks, but in some instances, there's a real danger. Be so careful when dealing with rentals." When she initially complained about the condition of the boat, she was credited 6,700 euros, according to TMZ. Michaels used her heroin experience to warn her followers to be wary of booking things online. She said this is the third time she was scammed. Hey man, you might need to start checking the Yelp reviews then, because this sounds like a you problem. You done got scammed three times, nigga.
Right, so obviously she's not going through like a travel, like somebody that could be held accountable.
Right.
And it might cost you more, but not trying to find it. It's worth paying the money and be like, because if something happened to me, y'all niggas accountable.
Look at this picture right here. What is this? Photos of the windows. This window looks shattered or something. Yeah, this looks dirty. I mean, it's definitely a dirty, she got played, that's for sure. She signed off on the post telling her followers that what they could do to protect themselves from being victims of scam. Listen, you the one got scammed three times. Maybe you should be taking your own advice. She wrote, "Beware, you guys know I keep my social pretty straightforward, fun, memes, nutrition tips, fitness videos, etc. But I feel compelled to ask you all to be very careful with any holiday rentals you book online. You could lose a lot of money and that sucks, but in some instances there's a real danger. Be so careful when dealing with these rentals." How many times you gonna tell me what she said? Anyway, be careful, y'all. Jillian Michaels got caught.
Yeah, she did.
Because of mafia.
$60,000, that's a lot of fucking money though.
That's quite the fantasy pairing. Demi Lovato cuddles her pet pooches Batman and Cinderella as she brags about getting a free dog walker for life.
Oh shit.
Demi Lovato, y'all, she back.
Don't know who that is.
A white woman,
apparently. So
a white, much like this wine. She is living a fantasy life. It must be one of her songs. And Demi Lovato certainly put some thought into the names of her constant companions, Batman and Cinderella. The singer cuddled her pet pooches, who may have the best celebrity dog names in the business. In a sweet Instagram post, she bragged about landing free dog walks for life. Demi, 24, boasted in her gloating post, I'm excited to partner with WAG. Thanks for supporting my music and giving my babies free. Hashtag WAG walks for life.
Aww.
The brunette beauty received Batman as a gift for her 23rd birthday and only adopted Cinderella a few months ago. New baby sisters named Cinderella. She captioned a sweet photo of the two pussies on Batman's Instagram page. Batman got his own Instagram page, dog. WAG, dubbed the Uber for dogs, is an online on-demand dog walking app who also promoted canine adoption by providing a meal to shelter dogs for every walk booked. Four-legged customers can be spotted with the little green bandanas they wear on every walk.
Aww.
And the owners receive a report card on their phone when they are done. What's the point of having a dog? You're not even gonna walk your own fucking dog, man. That must be nice to be that rich. Meanwhile, Demi's newest single, Sorry Not Sorry, arrived after a brief break from social media. The singer's last album, Confident, was released on October 16th, 2016. Yep, that's right. Her bragging about her dogs being walked for free is news. Mm-hmm. White people cared about that. Family Man Tobey Maguire takes a stroll with a strange wife, Jennifer Meyer, and their two kids at the party with Leonardo DiCaprio in St. Tropez.
Now, I know this white man. I don't know his wife, but I know
Tobey
Maguire.
Mm-hmm. He was Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I know who Leo is, too.
Leonardo DiCaprio, of course. As I pour some more of this serpent. Mm-mm-mm. After spending a week partying with models and best friend Leonardo DiCaprio in a yacht in St. Tropez, Tobey Maguire is back in these streets. Oh, I'm sorry, back in the States. And on Sunday, the former Spider-Man was seen spending time with his family. The 42-year-old actor was running errands in Beverly Hills with his estranged wife, Jennifer Meyer, as well as the children Otis and Ruby.
What?
Yeah, Otis and Ruby.
I'm done. Do you sure them kids ain't got no old black people names?
Otis and Ruby sound like an
old black couple that's been mad for 75 years.
I was gonna say an old black couple that was a band in the 50s.
Yes! Otis and Ruby!
Throw on some of that Otis and Ruby.
Yes!
Sporting black sunglasses and a black t-shirt, the Great Gatsby actor looked comfortable on a hot summer's day. His black drawstring Nike shorts were worn loose with matching black New Balance sneakers. Those are not matching.
Ah!
That's how white people match. It's the same color. Black people like, that's the wrong brand. Toby kept his cool with a water bottle in hand, and his family walked side by side in Beverly Hills. Wearing ripped jeans and a striped top, Jennifer accessorized her summer look with red sunglasses and a red shoulder bag. The designer paired black leather sandals and minimal bracelets with her casual weekend ensemble. Son Otis, age 7, matched his father in all black with neon green sandals, while 9-year-old daughter Ruby wore a white t-shirt and denim jean shorts.
You're right, that do sound like a black singing couple. Mm-hmm. Otis and Ruby, number one on the charts.
Yep. In 1957.
Yep.
Otis and Ruby with the My Heart Must Be On or some
right.
shit. Maya and Maguire started dating in 2003 and wed in 2007. In October 2016, they announced their split in a statement made to People. After much soul searching and consideration, we have made the decision to separate as a couple. As devoted parents, our first priority remains raising our children together, enduring love, respect, and friendship. The actor recently returned from a vacation on the yacht in St. Tropez with newly single best friend Leonardo DiCaprio. So they both in these streets.
Mm-hmm. All on these hoes.
You know they on these hoes.
Come on.
Toby and Leo on these hoes.
That's a Leo. Mm-hmm. A lot of them love Leo.
Mm-hmm. At least 5 people were rescued from a mile-long sandy island that popped up off the North Carolina coast after they got trapped by high tides.
Oh, shit. So it just popped up because of the high tides?
Mm-mm. It popped. I'll explain. At least 5 people have had to be rescued from a newly formed island off the coast of North Carolina. Shelly Island, which was formed almost overnight near the Outer Banks almost 2 months ago, has attracted tourists to the vast quantity of shells littered on the shores.
Holy shit.
Shell hunters, sunbathers, anglers, and photographers have been flocking to the new spot. However, rescuers have had to save 5 people last week when they were trapped on the island when the high tide came in.
I know, but some of y'all asses out there.
There you go, Karen. You figured it out.
Out there, did something pop up overnight? You'd be like, this was here today, it was there. Yesterday it wasn't there. It is. I'm not taking my ass out there.
Others who were struggling to swim on the island had to be helped by kayakers. Assistant chief to the Hatteras Island Rescue Squad, Bob Hale, told the Virginian Pilot. Now, Cape Hatteras National Seashore officials have issued warnings, asking beachgoers to avoid swimming or wading to the island because of strong undercurrents. Instead, they recommend visitors to use kayaks or paddle boards. A shell is not worth your life.
Also, they're going out there picking the shells.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Risking death. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, I tell you, one thing about white folks, man, somebody gonna find a shell. It's gonna have some magic powers. And you believe you me, white folk gonna find it, because niggas ain't going out there. They're like, it's magic out there. I'm good. Y'all can find all the magic.
Others who were struggling to swim to the island had to be helped by kayakers. Oh wait, I said
they
this.
Was like, they ain't saving me. My black ass will drown.
David Halleck, the superintendent of the Cape Hatteras National Seashore, which oversees the Cape Point area, said people should not attempt to walk or swim to the new island despite the temptation. He says likely that discarded fishing hooks are lurking in the sands, as is a popular spot with anglers. Meanwhile, Bill Smith, president of the North Carolina Beach Buggy Association, says the 5-foot-long sharks and stingrays as large as the hood of a truck have been spotted surfing in the shallows.
Yeah, because they see food. I would too. It's free food just falling into your living room.
The crescent-shaped landmass off the tip of Cape Point in Buxton started surfacing in the spring, and now it measures about 1 mile long, more than 400 feet wide. Locals have dubbed the sandbar Shelly Island because of the vast quality of shells littering its shores. Janice Regan, who lives nearby, told the Virginian Pilot that it was actually her grandson who came up with the app moniker. She added that the island is just a little bump in April. Aerial drone photos taken by Instagrammer Chad Coxzera show how the island now covers a sizable patch. The sandbar was formed from a combination of strong currents and storms. Experts say its shape will continue to evolve, and it could be gone by next year, or it could grow to be connected to the mainland.
What? Mm-hmm. And I'm just not thinking about what somebody said. Dad, just swimming in that shit, and you got sharks out there as big as the hood of a car.
Mm-hmm. They got no stingrays as big as the hood of a car, and long feet the sharks. But yeah,
get out there and get electrocuted and die.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, sure thank could. You can have all that.
Princess Mary and Prince Frederick horse around on holiday as they trot around the stunning surrounds of their summer place. Oh wait, summer palace. Jesus, you rich motherfuckers.
Not place, baby.
No, I got a summer palace. Oh, we summer at that palace.
Yes, we summer at that palace.
Mm-hmm.
We got a winter palace too, you know, one for the autumn and one for the spring.
Yes, on the north side of Westeros. Crown Princess Mary and her husband Prince Frederick of Denmark have taken a break from their royal duties. Oh, I know they were so tired. You cannot keep up that royal schedule, guys. I'm telling you.
Woo, it get hectic.
To saddle up for a scenic horseback ride, the pair were recently spotted riding through the sprawling forest by the royal family's summer residence, Graston Palace in southern Denmark. The royal couple were making the most of their downtime together as the horses trotted through the woods with the children nowhere to be seen. The effortlessly elegant princess, who hails from Tasmania. Oh, it's not just where Taz is from. Donned a chic horse riding getup, including a pair of jodhpurs, gloves, and black riding boots. The glamorous mother of four was all smiles as she and her husband rode along the picturesque countryside.
It's beautiful out there, I tell you that much. It is beautiful.
I feel bad for the person with the camera that had to walk in front of them.
Come on.
With her brunette locks pulled back for the occasion, the Australian Royal clasped gently onto the reins and rode with poise and grace. Followed behind her husband's tracks, the royal couple seemed relaxed as they took in the scenery of the leafy surroundings. The four children, Princess Christian, Princess Isabella, and twins Prince Vincent and Prince Josephine, were said to be playing at the palace while their parents embarked on the trek nearby. The royal family are currently on a summer holiday in Graston, more than 310 kilometers from their Copenhagen home. The family have been visiting the stunning palace in years with holiday snaps showing off the sprawling grounds of the summer home, which belonged to Frederick's grandmother, Queen Ingrid. Oh, we all do remember Queen Ingrid. So fondly. She was so royal. So prestigious. So anyways, white people was on horse riding, taking pictures. What else are white people talking about? Cash strapped Tory spelling. Or as black people call it, broke ass. Broke ass Tory spelling throws a lavish unicorn birthday party for her oldest daughter despite facing financial ruin.
Her definition of broke and broke ain't the same.
Mm-hmm. Still, nigga. Tori Spelling pulled out all the stops for her daughter Stella's 9th birthday party Saturday. Teams of guests got to enjoy a spectacular unicorn-themed party at the Spelling McDermott's home in Woodland Hills. While it looked like the over-the-top party cost a pretty penny, the family of seven is said to owe hundreds of thousands to the IRS, American Express, and City National Bank. But hey, why should that stop my daughter? Oh my.
What is happening with these pictures?
Oh my. I do declare. What's going on with her daughter's hair and lipstick too?
I don't know.
Y'all spent some money on this party.
Is Pete on this? Cause you sure put a thing on this horse's head.
Right?
Mm-mm-mm. I'm surprised somebody had Peter ain't called you out for that.
Money seemed to be far from the 44-year-old TV heiress mind, however, as she and her husband Dean McDermott indulged their little lady in a picture-perfect celebration. Stella's party looked like a dream come true to any princess loving grade schooler, featuring adorable treats, a magical makeup session, a piñata, crafts, and much more. And of course, a unicorn party couldn't be complete without one of the magical creatures. Luckily, the party was graced by one of the mythical ponies who looked like the real deal with a glittering horn, braided mane, and golden hooves. Look at her smile. She is so happy. You know what? That's worth the IRS.
Now debt. She is happy.
All them little girls having the time of their life. And she got on, and Tori got on the Prince unicorn stuff and the unicorn cake. You know what, man? I take it back, man.
All that glitter and stuff, yeah.
I'm gonna stop hating Tori.
They're having a good time.
Y'all have a good time. Fuck the IRS. While the birthday girl trotted around and on the super pony, Dad Dean was busy serving up snacks. Tori, meanwhile, was acting as hostess supreme, taking a moment to catch up with her 90210 co-star, Jeannie Garth. Mother Candy Spelling and her brother, Randy Spelling, were also among the many guests at the New York Times bestseller San Fernando Valley Home. Oh, there go Dean McDermott on the grill. Come on, Dean. Grill up them. Wait, you not grilling? Nigga, them cookies. What is he getting cookies out of that's smoking?
I don't know. I'm kind of so snacks confused. Is this?
Meth cookies? The fuck? Oh, she had a piñata.
Mm-hmm. Are you the corn cake?
That's good for her.
Oh, the cookies.
Look at the little cookies. Mm-hmm. Though the party seemed Though the party looked like it was out of budget to the reportedly bankrupt family, it appears that the soiree was actually more work than play. Much of Spelling's income relies on cash from photo shoots with her kids. This year, it also claimed the IRS demanded nearly $1 million from the daughter of famed producer Aaron Spelling, reportedly draining their bank accounts of a huge large sum and two failed after the two failed to make payments. Tori and Dean, who've been married since 2006, are also being sued by American Express, who claim to have an unpaid bill of nearly $90,000. And in May, they were ordered by the LA Superior Court to pay City National Bank over $200,000. Turns out that amount is only half of the loan they took out in 2012.
Good God.
A source told Star that they are in such bad financial hole that it looks like there will be no way out. The magazine also claimed Tori is now asking Mother Candy, who inherited Aaron's fortune, for a bailout again. Well, at least you got that.
That's what baby had a birthday party.
Got your birthday party. You know, that's good.
You gonna do it. Do it right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's wrap this up. Yeah, what am I doing? We had a good time, guys. I've been podcasting for a long time. And I feel like we got a lot of white people news in this week.
Yes.
So we can get ready to wrap this bad boy up. I do want to do one more. What are you going to say, Karen?
Wine and cheese is delicious.
The wine and cheese was delicious. I want to do one more story. Hold on. Catherine C. Dennis reveals she and Thomas Ravenel hooked up after the Southern Charm reunion.
Aw, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Love and hip hop for white folks.
Despite all their ups and downs, Catherine C. Dennis and Thomas Ravenel couldn't deny that they still have chemistry at this season's Southern Charm reunion. That was so much the case that they apparently shared an intimate moment together after the sit down ended. Catherine shared that she and Thomas hooked up after the reunion during the most recent episode of the podcast Be Here for a While with Rachel O'Brien.
Oh shit,
I don't know if it's theirs or not. Rachel O'Brien, I don't know who that is. I have never told anyone this, but after this year's reunion or whatever, you know how in the past we've hooked up afterwards? That happened this year, and this is the first time I'm saying it.
You know, I can't help but notice every time you look at Catherine.
What is this? Don't do that. Don't ruin this with their real voices. The Southern mom spoke about the possibility two could ever are the two ever getting back together again one day? We could be. I mean, the thing is, it would take a lot of work. And at this point in life, I don't know if he's able to make that commitment to someone or something, because he never had to be accountable, I guess, to someone else or whatever, Catherine explained. She went on to say that it feels as though the relationship was the closest Thomas has come to committing to one woman. I was able to navigate who he is. And I could tell whoever he was angry about something, it wasn't me. But he was taking it out on me. And I knew not to respond. Let him get it out. Let him calm himself down. And then whatever. I was able to, I guess, tailor myself and tailor the situation to make it as amicable and peaceful as possible. And that was a part of me, I feel like, stayed with him even through all the bullshit. And the difficult things I had to accept outside of the show, too. Even though their relationship didn't work out, Catherine said she's still supportive of Thomas, with whom she has a daughter and a son today. I wish him nothing but the best. He's the father of my children, and I told him, all I want to be is your greatest supporter, your biggest fan, and your friend when you need me. I want you to be the best father you could be. And I really do mean that, because at the end of the day, it's not about us. It's about our kids. And I finally have detached emotionally. Ultimately, as far as ever getting back together, Catherine is never saying never. I mean, I'll never say that, because Lord have mercy. We have said that so many times in the past. And when we were around each other, just like after the reunion, we immediately gravitate towards each other. Then there's this like look we get. Then there's still that attraction. He can charm me, but I realize it's like a temporary type of attention.
Oh shit.
I don't know if that makes sense, but it's only for that moment. After that, he's gonna continue doing what T-Rav wants to do. And that's okay. In fact, she thinks Thomas wants to settle down. No, I think he wants to. Even when we've spoke off camera, he tells me he's lonely. He tells me he wishes he could give it another shot. And perhaps without the cameras and whatnot around, we could really thrive as a family and know that deep down, that's what he wants. But I just truly think that's personality wise, he's a product of his past. And that person cannot have a normal relationship that is consistent for a long period of time, unfortunately.
Knocking over all the sweet iced tea, ain't we?
All, spilling all of this Lipton iced tea.
Right?
Catherine revealed on Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen in June that this his relationship...
He be having everybody on his show, don't he?
I know. Oh, I'm sorry. Thomas revealed. Okay, his relationship with Catherine has gotten a lot better. And that chemistry is palpable. But as far as ever tying the knot with his former flame, that doesn't seem to be in the cards. According to T-Rav, I don't think so. I just think, again, I've said this innumerable times, the age difference is so great. He said on WWHL, it's like my preacher told me, and he was a sex therapist, because he said, look, things are going great now, but in 15 years, you know, how much Viagra am I going to have to buy? It's going to get expensive. These days, Catherine has moved on in the romance department. She started dating a guy she met on Bumble after returning home from the reunion. Watch Catherine give an update, because I don't want to click that link, so fuck it. All right. let's do some sore ratchetness. Hey, we can get out of here, guys.
Yep.
Been going for a while. It's a double header. I gotta edit two episodes and get them up tonight.
Yep, you be tired of that. And before y'all text us and tweet us, not text us, but email.
We are off on Wednesday, yeah, back on Thursday, back recapping on Thursday. Game of Thrones with the crew, with the homies, with the originators of Dem Thrones, the DC slang, infectious talking, Firestarter, man, crew. So I can't wait to talk to them about it. This is gonna be a good episode to talk about.
Oh yes, it is.
Be there or be square, yeah. You suckers.
Because it was lit for real. It was lit.
Mm-hmm. All right, sore ratchetness. All right, let me see, find the right story. What is this one? Police say a man was injured in a reported sword attack in Missouri. Raytown, Missouri. Police in Kansas City, Missouri, suburb Raytown, are investigating a sword attack that injured a man. Police say the victim of the incident shortly before 4 a.m. Monday was treated at a hospital for injuries not considered life-threatening, and alleged assailant was arrested. No additional details were provided. There's no immediate word about the charges. That was too short. Gotta find a better one. How about this one? Police arrest. Oh, come on, man. Is this real? Here we go. This bullshit. Give me a second. Let me find the motherfucking. Police arrest a one-armed machete-wielding clown. What the fuck is going on with these clowns, man? When is this gonna be over? A man is accused of drunkenly strolling down a main road wearing a black hooded t-shirt and a clown mask, brandishing a machete taped to his arm that had been amputated.
What
kind of motherfucking borderland shit is this? Maine State Police say 31-year-old Corey Berry of Hollis was arrested Tuesday and charged with criminal threatening. He was released after posting $200 bail. Police say Berry was first spotted in Hollis, but then fled into the woods. He was taken in custody after reemerging in Water Barrel. Police say Berry was intoxicated but cooperative. He told officers he was copying previous clown sightings as a prank. The phone number for Berry couldn't be found Wednesday. fucking disgusting. All right, bye guys, we'll be back tomorrow. I mean, we'll be back Thursday. Thank you so much for listening to the show. We appreciate y'all. Till then, Karen.
Yes.
I love you.
I love you too. Mwah.